fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. My VOA colleague, Carol Castiel, recently invited me to be on her Press Conference USA radio program. The show reviewed the 2018 World Cup football tournament in Russia. For our Voice of America listeners who may have missed it, well, not to worry. This evening, we excerpt a few highlights for you. Here's Carol.
On this special edition of the program, the 2018 FIFA World Cup, a look back at the games, politics, and other highlights and surprises of the tournament. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Joining me on the program is soccer aficionado Caroline Ring, a student at Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina. She's doing a summer internship with Press Conference USA. Our in-house experts, Sunny Young, host of the popular Sunny Side of Sports, and João Santarita, editor and broadcaster in VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. The 2018 FIFA World Cup produced games and moments that are sure to leave lasting memories, inspiring both soccer fans and players alike. Here's FIFA President Gianni Infantino's take on the four-week event.
Since a couple of years, I was saying that this will be the best World Cup ever. Today, I can say it with more conviction because I lifted and you lifted. It is the best World Cup ever.
France's victory over dark horse Croatia 4-2 on July 15th rendered the 2018 World Cup final one of the highest scoring finals in the tournament's history. And Les Bleus lifted the trophy for the second time in their history, 20 years after France hosted the tournament in 1998. Although this World Cup also marked the first time since 1982 that an African team did not advance to the knockout stages of the tournament, some found hopes in the diverse representation within France's World Cup squad. 19-year-old French forward Kylian Mbappe, of Cameroonian and Algerian descent, became the first teenager to score in a World Cup final since Brazilian legend Pelé in 1958. Throughout the four-week tournament, underdogs soared and Germany's reign as champion was cut short, a competition that began by showcasing the sport's biggest stars, Argentina's Lionel Messi and Portugal's Cristiano Ronaldo, quickly shifted to highlighting the likes of Luka Modric of Croatia, Benjamin Pavard of France, and Eden Hazard of Belgium. England's striker Harry Kane scored 6 goals, earning the 2018 World Cup's Golden Boot Award. This surprisingly totaled the same number of goals Argentina scored throughout their brief tournament run. Harry Kane talks about England's 2-1 loss to Croatia during extra time of the Cup's semifinals.
Obviously, we're proud of everything we've done. We've worked as hard as I think we could have worked, but of course it hurts. It was a great opportunity for us to get to a World Cup final, and it hurts now, and it'll hurt for a while, but we have to hold our heads up high.
Harry Kane after England's devastating loss to Croatia, which eliminated them from the competition. Kane's advice of maintaining a positive and constructive outlook towards the future is also applicable to numerous countries who faced upsets during or even before the 2018 World Cup, especially as they prepare for the 2022 games in Qatar. We'll look at the games and politics of the 2018 FIFA World Cup, as well as preview the 2022 tournament in Qatar with VOA's Sunny Young and João Santarita. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Sporty greetings.
I'm personally delighted to welcome Caroline Ring, who, when she wasn't helping with our shows, was constantly following World Cup coverage. Well, let me turn first to you, Sunny Young. Do you share the view that this was one of the most exciting World Cups in a long time? And if so, why?
I would definitely say it's one of the best World Cups that I've witnessed. Just from a scoring standpoint, there were 20 go-ahead or tying goals after the 80th minute. So there were a lot of dramatic goals during the late stages of matches, which really boosted the excitement in Russia. But you talked about some of the surprise teams, Iceland making its debut at the World Cup. We had Russia, the host nation, making a surprising run to the quarterfinals. I didn't think they would get out of the group stage, Joao.
No, nobody did. I don't think the Russians expected that. So they did very well. But this is what happened throughout the tournament. It started very exciting. I mean, we just have to remember the game Spain-Portugal. I mean, there was two of the favorites that had this opening game after the second or third day of the tournament, and they drew 3-3. Mm. This was high-level scoring. Later on, maybe we can talk about the scoring and why. But yeah, it was indeed, Russia was a big surprise. And Croatia, in a way, I mean, they always had a good team, but I think they were also a big surprise to get to where they were.
Now, I'd like to turn to Caroline for your take on the high and low moments. How did it compare to the few games or tournaments that you've seen before?
It seems like the 2018 World Cup really found the perfect balance and a delicate formula of excitement. It wasn't too overwhelming, but it wasn't too underwhelming. Sonny talked about the last-minute goals. There were four defeat-avoiding equalizer goals in the last minute as well, which really gave the games quite a mix-up and made them really fun to watch. And set-piece goals, meaning the goals resulted from free kicks or corner kicks, were a pivotal aspect of the matches, with 43% of the goals scored in the tournaments coming from those setups, which is the highest ratio in any World Cup since 1966. So all of these elements really together set the 2018 World Cup apart from past tournaments and generated lots of excitement.
Yes, yes. And the Belgians. The Belgians made an incredible comeback against Japan. They were down 2-0 at halftime.
Exactly.
And they scored three second-half goals. Yeah. Just an amazing comeback.
And Sonny, how did Germany, the previous world champion, slip and the tiny Croatia surge ahead?
Good question. I had the Germans penciled in for either the semifinals or the final in Russia. Part of it, from my perspective, Joachim Löw, their manager, he was around at the last World Cup in Brazil in 2014. I think it's very difficult for a manager at the senior level to go two cycles, two World Cup cycles. In other words, it's hard for their message to be heard by the players for two World Cup cycles. But again, a great surprise that the Germans got knocked out, I think, by the South Koreans.
Well, speaking of being knocked out, I have a question for you, João Santa Rita, to talk about Brazil, patrão da bola.
Si.
All right, so Brazil, that's Portuguese for king of the ball, which it normally is. How did they get eliminated so early?
Well, again, you know, nobody expected. As Sonny was saying, Germany and Brazil, for me, were penciled in to go to the finals. But I think what happened in this World Cup was that you had the build-up of teams that were playing like teams. Stars did not count anymore. And therefore, the teams that came to play as a team without being too much concentrated on stars like Neymar, you know, addicted to melodramatics. And, you know, and so this is what happened. And another thing, and I think maybe here we can get into the tactics, it's that because the good teams tend to play attacking soccer. And what happened, if you look at this World Cup, is that the teams that did very well were playing counter-attacking soccer.
Good point.
They were playing defensively and having lethal, fast and very efficient counterattacks. Belgium, even France. So you had this kind of difference in soccer, which made it very exciting.
That's João Santa Rita, a broadcaster with the Voice of America's Portuguese to Africa service. João and I were invited to be on a special Press Conference USA show on the 2018 World Cup. And thanks to my VOA colleague, Carol Castiel, for the invitation. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I encourage our VOA listeners to go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/VOA Sunny, because it's time for another Facebook Live video. Facebook Live video. Go to facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Meanwhile, world football's governing body, FIFA, has announced the three best goals at Russia 2018. Joining us with more details is reporter Prince Nesta. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny. Benjamin Pavard's outside of the foot rocket for France against Argentina has been voted the best goal of the 2018 World Cup tournament in Russia. The 22-year-old defender's effort peeped 17 other goals to top accolade in an online poll where over 3 million football fans voted on the FIFA website. Pavard's goal saw off stiff competition, including Colombian Juan Quintero's clever free kick against Japan, which finished second, and Luka Modric's long-range stunner against Argentina, which came in third. Pavard becomes the first European player to win the goal of the tournament accolade since it was introduced in 2006.
Prince, who are some of the previous winners of this award?
Colombia's James Rodriguez won the award during the 2014 World Cup Championship that was held in Brazil. Argentine Maxi Rodriguez also won it during the 2006 World Cup held in Germany. And former Uruguayan lethal striker Diego Forlan also won the award during the 2010 World Cup that was held in South Africa. In more football news, Manchester United edged out AC Milan in a 26-penalty shootout thriller, winning the match 9-8 after a 1-1 draw. Alexis Sanchez found the net in the 12th minute before Spanish midfielder Suso equalized for Milan just 3 minutes later. Milan's Ivorian 21-year-old Frank Kessie was unable to respond and missed the decisive kick in the International Champions Cup friendly match held at the Carson Stubham Center in California. Manchester United's forward Antoine Martial missed the match to attend the birth of his second child. Martial is also expected to miss the rest of the Manchester United's tour in the United States. Speaking about Manchester United, their former manager Sir Alex Ferguson has spoken publicly for the first time since undergoing emergency brain surgery in May. In an interview with Manchester United TV, the 76-year-old who has been recovering at home for nearly 2 months sent an emotional thank you message to the hospital staff who saved his life after suffering a brain hemorrhage. Ferguson, who retired in 2013 after winning 38 trophies during his 26-year spell with Manchester United, also vowed to be back later to watch Manchester United. Here is Ferguson's message.
Hello. Just a quick message, first of all, to thank the medical staff at Macclesfield, Salford Royal and Alexandra Hospitals. Believe me, without those people who gave me such great care, I would not be sitting here today. So thank you for me and my family. Thank you very much. It's made me feel so humble, as all the messages I've had from all over the world, wishing me the best, and the good wishes do resonate very, very strongly with me. So thank you for that support you've given me. And lastly, I'll be back later in the season to watch the team. And in the meantime, all the best to Jose and the players. Thank you very much.
Here on the Sunny Side of Sports, our thoughts and prayers are with you, Sir Alex, and we also wish you quick recovery.
Prince, nice message there by Sir Alex.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, Liverpool also came from behind to beat Manchester City 2-1 in New Jersey. Mo Salah returned to goal-scoring form, netting a late equaliser just 52 seconds after coming off the bench. The 26-year-old Egyptian forward, who scored 44 goals in 52 games for the Reds last season, equalised Leroy Sané's second-half goal before forward Sadio Mane scored the winner in the International Champions Cup match played in front of 52,000 fans. Salah and Senegal forward Mane were both playing for the first time since their countries were knocked out of the World Cup at the group stage.
Prince, any news on recent Premier League transfers.
Well, there has been a couple of news here and there. Chelsea have signed former England goalkeeper Robert Green on a one-year deal. And this is sort of a free transfer because the 38-year-old joins the club on a free transfer after being released by Huddersfield. And Green brings in experience in the team, considering the fact that he has played in over 650 games for Norwich City. He also played for West Ham United. He has played for Queen's Park Rangers and Leeds, and he also has 12 England caps. And he will provide a good backup for Thibaut Courtois and Willy Caballero at the Stamford Bridge. Also, Swansea City striker Andre Ayew has also agreed to join Turkish side Fenerbahce on a season-long loan deal. And the Turkish side also have an option to sign the 28-year-old Ghana international on a permanent deal after the loan. Bayern Munich have also completed the signing of teenage winger Alphonso Davies from MLS side Vancouver Whitecaps. And Davies was born in Ghana, Sunny. For your information, he was born in Ghana and has scored 3 goals in 20 appearances for the Whitecaps this season. Back to you, Sunny.
Thanks, Prince. That's reporter Prince Nesta. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to tennis, American star Serena Williams has taken to social media to voice her frustration over frequent drug testing. Joining us to tell us more is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Following a visit from doping officials on Tuesday, Serena wrote this on her Twitter page. And it's that time of the day to get randomly drug tested and only test Serena. Out of all the players, it's been proven I'm the one getting tested the most. Discrimination? I think so. At least I'll be keeping the sport clean. I'm ready to do whatever it takes to have a clean sport, so bring it on. I'm excited. Hashtag stay positive. This is not the first time Serena has questioned the frequency in which she's been selected for random drug testing. She has previously described her treatment as shocking. Last month, an anti-doping official arrived 12 hours earlier than their agreed-upon time, and Serena wasn't home. She talked about that incident in a news conference ahead of Wimbledon.
Every day, every player gives a time for testing, and my time was actually 12 hours later. For some reason, 12 and a half hours later, for some reason, they showed up in the morning, which they are allowed to do. And if I'm not there, then they just leave. For whatever reason, they didn't leave. And they said, well, I can come back. And I was like, well, I'm totally not in the area because my hour is actually a long time from now. So I'm completely so far away.
The incident was not documented as a missed test, but a report that followed revealed Serena had been tested 5 times by the month of June, more than double the number of tests for other top American women's tennis players. Serena issued a tweet back in May where she wrote in part, "And just like that, the anti-doping is here again, second time this week. Proud to participate to keep the sport clean 2 times every week." Serena told reporters she just wants things to be fair.
Equality. That's the only thing I've been preaching. It's all about equality. And that's all I want. I just want everyone to be treated the same. If that's test everyone 5 times, then let's do it. Like, let's be a part of it. But it's just about being equal and not centering one person out. And just due to the numbers, it looks like I'm being pushed out.
Yet despite the frequency of the drug tests, Serena says she is a strong advocate for keeping the sport drug-free.
I despise having people in our sport that aren't being honest, so I'm totally okay with testing, and I encourage it, and I'm okay for it. But what I want to know is that everyone is getting tested and that we are really working to keep the sport clean.
Serena is the winner of 23 Grand Slams and made a remarkable run to the Wimbledon finals just 10 months after giving birth. Serena's returned to the world's top 30 in the WTA rankings. In other tennis news, the City Open tournament will begin this weekend right here in Washington, D.C. This year's event commemorates 50 years of professional tennis in the nation's capital and will feature some of the sport's brightest stars, most notably 8-time Grand Slam champion and 3-time city tournament winner Jimmy Connors will help promote the event. Tournament chairman and former U.S. Davis Cup captain Donald Dell is quoted as saying, "What better way to kick off our 50th edition than to welcome back the greats that competed in years past? I'm excited to celebrate this momentous occasion with those who helped to build this tournament, those who helped to sustain this tournament, and now those who are helping to ensure its longevity in the city." Dell co-founded the tournament along with John Harris in 1969, and it was one of the first open professional tennis tournaments in the United States. The year before it was established, Dell asked tennis legend Arthur Ashe if he would play in the tournament. Arthur told him he would play every year, but only if the courts are in a public park in a desegregated neighborhood where everyone, regardless of race, has the opportunity to watch. The tournament has taken place in the heart of the city in our beautiful Rock Creek Park ever since. The City Open begins on July 28th and runs until August 5th. And that's all from me. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Rocksteady Boxing is a fitness program designed especially for people with Parkinson's, a disease that affects the motor system and leads to tremors and balance problems. VOA's Faith Lapidus reports.
Some 2 dozen fighters with Parkinson's gather at the Rocksteady Boxing facility in Northern Virginia twice a week.
3, 4, 4.
Neil Eisner was diagnosed with Parkinson's 6 years ago. He was among the first to join the program last December, and he likes it.
One big step forward, one big step to the side.
I think Alec, who's the teacher, is really accenting those features that are prominent in Parkinson's. For example, some people have problems walking or tripping. He works on exercises that affect the legs. He works on exercises that affect balance. That's something I'm having particular problems with. One of the things, interestingly enough, is you tend to have a lower voice. When you have that lower voice, people can't hear you. You don't realize it. So he accents getting us to bring up our voice clearly and more loudly.
You're going to do 10 punches. You're going to say out loud, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, go!
My aunt has a gym in Westchester, New York, and she does a Rocksteady Boxing program there.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And then she invited me up to her gym to check out the program. She thought it would be, you know, a perfect fit for what I do.
Langstein got interested and became a licensed RSB trainer.
Typical boxer's program, they focus on balance, hand-eye coordination, reaction time, footwork. There's some cognitive stuff because in boxing, certain numbers equal certain punches.
3, 4, 5.
So when I yell out certain numbers, they have to move and react at the same time, so the brain and the body's working together.
Jab, cross, hook, uppercut.
Research shows that exercise helps with the brain use the dopamine more efficiently. My goal usually is after I work with someone with Parkinson's disease, I kind of refer them out and suggest that they get involved in exercise programs out in the community. Rocksteady Boxing is great. It's up and coming. It's super popular.
1, 2, 3, 6.
Victoria Herbert has a tremor in her left hand. Certain situations can trigger her tremors.
Being cold, being hot, sitting with a crowd that I'm not real comfortable with, I'll start shaking. I end up having to sit on my hand just to keep it still.
But with this crowd, Herbert doesn't feel the need to hide her disease.
These people have become very close in the 4 or 5 months we've been together. That's a big part of it. And sharing experiences with others.
Go, rotate, clockwise!
Sharing similar challenges and hope makes these fighters feel they're not alone. It also gives them the support and determination to keep fighting the disease. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks, Faith. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Rocksteady Boxing for its work with Parkinson's patients. And that wraps up the July 26th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Wojtek Zorniak. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Fostering economic development in sub-Saharan Africa is a top priority of the United States, and the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, is the centerpiece of U.S. trade policy on the continent. The Trump administration places great importance on our relationship with Africa and sees genuine promise in the prospects for enhanced trade relationships with our partners, said Deputy Secretary of State John Sullivan. Speaking at the 17th annual AGOA Forum in Washington, D.C. in mid-July, Deputy Secretary Sullivan noted that the U.S. partnership with African countries is based on a number of strategic priorities. We work together to strengthen regional security, reinforce democratic governance, and increase trade and investment, he said.
We do all of these things because we understand that security and democratic institutions provide a stable foundation for economic growth and prosperity. At the same time, increased trade and investment are key to creating jobs and generating resources that strengthen security and democracy. When partners increase their capacity to confront real security challenges that we all face, we demonstrate how alliance building through economic cooperation promotes security.
Africa is the major market of the future, said Deputy Secretary Sullivan. Some of the world's fastest-growing economies call Africa home. We expect that over the next three decades, half of the world's population growth will occur in Africa. And that means a projected 1.2 billion new consumers will enter the African market, said Mr. Sullivan.
These trends, combined with Africa's growing youth population, will allow African countries to capitalize on a growing labor force. This great opportunity will come with challenges, however, including the need to provide jobs for this growing population. Expansion of trade and investment will be critical to meeting this challenge.
The United States applauds efforts such as the signing last March of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement framework because it advances another key component, regional integration. The United States stands ready to partner with African countries that are committed to reducing barriers to trade and investment, said Deputy Secretary Sullivan. In doing so, we hope to encourage policy reforms that increase openness and competitiveness within Africa and promote greater prosperity and higher living standards across the continent.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC,
right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts. every hour on the top of each hour 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
This is